a pre-recorded version of the WTK Roundtable on WTK, unsurprisingly, 9 o'clock Thursdays. This is recorded, though, so if you call in, nobody will answer you.
As any, talking about the altruistic nature of Greg Sankey. I mean, he's just we got to the bottom of it, fellas, and this is the segment we call, or the hour we call, the MCO Blog Roundtable Hour with Brian Cook from MCO Blog. Brian, good morning.
Good morning.
Craig Ross, who's in Hawaii, enjoying. I mean, we get calls from, you know, Hutch is going to Florida, Jack Harbaugh's in Florida, Craig's in Hawaii. We're the only one stuck here in Ann Arbor.
Well, what's the weather like?
It's not like it is in Hawaii.
It's 9 degrees today. So
nine.
Far. It's nine right now. Yeah.
Yeah, but I can't really complain since, you know, it hasn't been very cold all
it's
year.
It's going to be 50 on Saturday.
Yeah, and then we're going to get hit with a blizzard. Mark my words. It's coming.
I don't mind.
Bite your tongue.
Anyway, Ira was in the break there talking about Greg Sankey, the commissioner of the SEC. And so, fellas, we got to the bottom of where all of this angst is coming from about, you know, player or student athletes in the spring breaks. Come to find out, his true concern began with rowing. Because did you know rowing? And it's the off season for rowing. Michigan's rowing team is going down to Clemson, and they're going to be practicing at Clemson over spring break. So he just needed something more visible to bring attention to the mistreatment of rowers.
Is that a real thing?
Yeah, so the rowing team, their preseason practice the week at Clemson. How about, Sam, you forgot yesterday with Coach Henry. They do have the NCAAs before in the indoor season, but it's basically a preseason training for the outdoor season. It's called the spring break camp. They're going to Orange Beach, Alabama. So I think track and field and rowing, yeah, those are the
that's
where it's coming from.
That's where his concern truly began. I mean, because clearly he's not just jumping on this because the football team is involved, right? I mean, he's just... He's not that shallow and disingenuous,
no.
Is he?
Well, and we talked about this last week. If they really cared about having student-athletes off campus, they would push to move the baseball and softball seasons back. Because, you know, the baseball team's going to be off campus for a month here.
Right.
So it's obviously a disingenuous attempt to slow down the Harbaugh train. But you can't slow this train down, Greg Sankey.
Where is Jim Delaney on all this?
I agree. I can't remember the caller that brought that up. And
oh, really?
Craig, you are exactly right. I think it, and not just the commissioner. Look, I just, and we talked about this before, guys. I think the like-minded, like similar scenario teams and coaches need to band together and forward their initiative too. I mean, you have a concerted effort by coaches and the commissioners and the ACC and the SEC to thwart this Michigan offensive. I mean, there needs to be a similar sort of initiative up this way, and I think Jim Delaney should be a big part of it.
Well,
yeah,
I think you got to work. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, the one coach who has spoken out, I think, was our boy Mark D'Antonio, who said this, you know, taking a team down south for spring practice was a really good idea, and he was embarrassed he hadn't thought of it.
Right, and these teams, it makes sense for them to do it. I mean, this is just such a – now that he's done it, it's like, wow, duh, this is an awesome idea, because now, obviously, you can have those guys have some fun in the sun. They can get that in as well. But the opportunity to have kids that – live in close proximity to wherever you're practicing, come see a spring practice. It's an unbelievable opportunity for you.
It is. I wonder if, you know, Jim Delaney is polishing his I brought Rutgers to the Big Ten trophy too much.
Like, Brian, what about this theory that he doesn't have consensus yet? Because he has to speak on consensus, doesn't he? What if 8 of the coaches of the Big Ten don't like it?
And dude, why?
They can't afford to take a spring break trip.
The guy proposed freshman ineligibility, and there is no way that he had consensus in the Big Ten.
I know. I'm just trying to come up with some reason why he's still silent, because
he
shouldn't be silent.
If he's silent on If he's silent on spring break practices, he shouldn't be silent on satellite camps.
No, he should not be silent
because that would benefit every program in the Big Ten.
What about Jim Delaney's tenure has given you the impression that he's a leader, or that you even want him opening his mouth? Because remember that thing where he like sent some pissy letter after the bowl season about how the SEC wasn't actually that good, right before they go win like 6 national championships. Like, let's just keep Jim Delaney in a box away from anything except a TV executive.
Well, how about you give him a script then? I mean, he is the figurehead.
I don't trust him to read a script.
that's pretty bad if he can't do that.
He is the Rutgers basketball team of conference commissioners. Let's just leave him out of it.
You know, just have Jimmy write up his script and have him, you know, just be the talking head for the initiative. Because, like I said, look, it doesn't take a trip to Florida for a satellite camp to be effective for a team like Iowa. Iowa, which they've had satellite camps, I mean, have one in Chicago.
Yeah.
Which they do that, and that's why I can't understand where Ferentz is coming from. Man, the guy is in another world talking about he doesn't want to have satellite camps because who are you getting from Iowa?
He doesn't want to work. Like, I mean, that's kind of the thing is that, you know, there's a certain amount of work that goes into being a college head coach, and that's a huge amount of work. And after that's done, Jim's like, what's next? And Ferentz doesn't want to do that. And I can understand that as a person who does not work nearly as hard as a college head coach. But that's the reason. It's like he doesn't want to work as hard as Jim does.
Makes sense, but yeah. Okay, you don't have to.
Yeah, but
there's no choice.
He doesn't want. I mean, Nick Saban had the same thing happen to him when he first showed up at Alabama. Because he was showing up at high schools and in dead periods and quiet periods and, you know, having bumps with guys that were a little bit more than bumps, and everybody freaked out, and they changed some rules so that he couldn't do that. And that didn't really slow down Nick Saban. I don't think it's going to slow down Jim Harbaugh either.
Yeah. I hope, you know how people are. People very often don't vote with their heads. They vote with their hearts. So, you know, you got to axe the grind. You don't want to see Michigan get ahead. Maybe you think, maybe you don't like Jim Harbaugh. Hey, let's vote it out. When that's totally counter your interest if you're a Northern team. Like someone said, Pat Narduzzi spoke out against, give me a break. How could anything Michigan is doing right now not be a good idea for Pittsburgh if they could do it too? Be a great idea if Pittsburgh could have a satellite camp down in Florida somewhere. I mean, not even down in Florida.
Virginia.
Virginia. Yeah. You know, Maryland. It doesn't matter. Satellite camps are a great idea for them.
Well, and the thing about the camps is that there's no argument against them whatsoever. Because you know that the SEC has this argument. It's a bad argument. It's a think of the children argument about the spring practices. But what is the argument against satellite camps? Like, the guys go down to a place where they're not from, and they go and they show up. And then if you as a player want to go do that, you can go do it. And if you don't, here's the thing. You don't have to. So like, there's literally no argument from the perspective of the kids as to like why you want a satellite camp or not.
But right, they're with you.
So they didn't even try. They were just like, we're going to ban this because whatever. And now that they actually have some sort of crappy manufactured reason, they're just beating it to death. And it's just like, do you really think that people don't see right through that?
I'm hoping, but like I said, how many times, I mean, we see countless examples and we are not getting in a political discussion, but you know that people vote with their hearts often more than they do with their heads. It's just how people are.
Like, prefacing that statement with "we're not getting into political discussion," but is kind of like saying I'm not a racist. But
I don't have to get specific. I don't have to give specific examples.
I'm not a racist. But
I don't have to give us. You know, just on anything. Yeah, sure. People they often vote emotionally as opposed to, you know, hey, what would really benefit me.
Well, in this case, I think that they are thinking about what would benefit me, because Kirk Ferentz isn't like, well, I'm going to win a national championship. Kirk Ferentz is like, well, I could not do this and I could catch up on what was that?
Kirk Ferentz.
Look. Wentworth Prison on Netflix. he could watch that instead of doing the satellite camp. So he is thinking about his own self-interest there.
Well, I got to tell you, Iowa's recruiting base isn't that broad. Is Iowa getting Cedric Lattimore if Michigan or Michigan State jump on him early? The more you can do to enhance your visibility, if you're Iowa, because you aren't getting kids from Iowa that are really going to consistently be All-Americans, you do it. You have a satellite camp in Michigan. Maybe you have one in Texas and one in Chicago. That helps Iowa get its brand out. And, you know, last year, but for the past 10 years or so, last year is a total anomaly for Iowa football.
Wait, I agree with you. Like, Iowa, if they were more focused entirely on winning football games, would totally be on board with this. But Kirk Ferentz is focused on winning football games sometimes. And then, I mean, Better Call Saul is on Netflix now. Like, there's a lot of stuff on Kirk Ferentz's queue.
I haven't seen that one yet. I was a Breaking Bad fan, though. I thought that was great.
I've only seen the first two episodes of Better Call Saul, but they were very good. And if I'm Kirk Ferentz, I'm like, well, I could binge watch this, or I could go do some recruiting. And my job's secure either way, so here we go.
You talk about a guy with a great contract. Is there a coach with a better contract than Kirk Ferentz?
Well, after last year, it's actually getting towards the realm of reasonable because he had a very good year last year. And that contract keeps getting shorter and shorter. So, he really pulled his butt out of the fire there because he was getting to the point where people were like, well, should we do something about this?
Well, they need to have a little forethought for the coach after Kirk Ferentz. Satellite camps are going to be a good idea. It's 9:18. Yeah. Go ahead, Craig.
I was just thinking, you know, if satellite camps would be an advantage for anyone, it'd be an advantage for a school like Pittsburgh, like Michigan State, like Illinois or Iowa, who have sort of a lesser national cachet or recognition. For Michigan, I'm not sure the satellite camps have a lot of value added. I mean, it's great that Harbaugh is doing it. Maybe he'll find a kid, and it does help them with their national image. But it would seem to me it's schools that are sort of good football programs or potentially good football programs. Who don't have this sort of national reputation, it seems to me the satellite camps would be a lot better for them. And so it's quite mystifying to me. And maybe, as Brian says, maybe it's just, they don't want their coaches to have, it's hard enough doing that job and it's long hours, and maybe they're just trying to, protect that as much as they can. But on the other hand, a guy like Ferentz, I don't know what he makes, $5 million a year. I mean, so.
I thought it was more than that.
Well, maybe more than that, but whatever. You're going to, for $5 million a year, you usually have to work.
Yeah, I hear that. I mentioned Ira. There was one coach very honest about it, Mark Richt. He said, hey, we want a vacation. This will eat into that. And I appreciated that. At least that guy's honest. At least he's saying, telling you exactly how it is. We want a break.
Yeah, if Greg Sankey said about satellite camps, we don't want them coming down and trying to recruit our kids, from our area. About the spring break, if he said, we're just trying to protect our turf, we'd still laugh at him, but at least we'd say, you're being honest about it.
Yeah, the trumped up think of the children angle is just, especially because they're trying to use NCAA rules against Michigan when there's not maybe more than one or two programs in that entire conference that even know what the NCAA rules are.
And are you, if you make the argument that kids should have their spring break, and that's sacrosanct. You cannot take that away from kids. Don't you have to extend it to the other sports as well?
Yeah.
To all the non-revenue sports that use that time to their advantage. I mean, it's just.
Like, what is so sacrosanct about, like, getting drunk on South Padre Island? Like, that's the cause they've taken up.
Right,
like,
but not, right.
Brian, we need casual sex and drunken Tuesdays for football players because they don't get that every week of the year.
And not just that point, but so Michigan last year, they started their spring ball before spring break, took a week off of spring break, and then came back. Other schools are having spring break, having spring ball wrapped around their spring breaks. So you're telling me that if you're a football player, you're going to work out for all your the winter conditioning. You're going to start your spring ball, and then you're going to take a week and just go party your tail off for a week. Some what are you going to feel like when you come back?
Some do.
But what are you going to feel like when you come back? You're behind the ball. You're behind again. So might as well enjoy it and get a little work in. Most of them are basically asked to work out while they're on vacation anyway.
Right. Hey, I think it's a great idea. It's a great idea, and I think more schools are going to take it up unless they come up with some ridiculous rule outlaw.
Oh, they'll ban it.
I have some hope that other schools, whether it's satellite camps or this, will see that this is totally self-serving for the SEC and the SEC schools. Totally self-serving. So
well, yeah, and obviously, I mean, Alabama went to Dr. Phillips High School when D. Hart was there for their bowl practices and like bought them a new facility. Like, come on.
And then Clinton Dix committed. They probably left him an envelope behind too.
Michigan should have jumped on early. Anyway, it's 9:22 on a Thursday. When we come back on the other side, we got to switch gears. The conversation that Brian has been avoiding for weeks.
I can still talk about Kalik Hudson. We can still do that.
Michigan basketball.
Hockey.
They have four games. They have four games left in the regular season. How much work do they need to do? What hope do you have for this team? I mean, you look at the record. I mean, some fans act as if all hope is lost. They're 9-5 in conference play. So it's not like the die has been cast on this team not being a tournament team. So we'll talk about that on the other side here. Michigan Insider Sports Talk 1050 WTKA, The Ticket. And we are back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA, The Ticket. We are live inside the Emden Studios. A couple of things, guys, want to remind you, tomorrow is the day. Jim Harbaugh will be at the Emden on campus, 303 South State Street from 3 until 4:30 p.m. The first 200 customers are guaranteed autographs. Guaranteed autographs. Wristbands will be available beginning at 9 a.m. So your chance to meet Jimmy, get your autograph signed, rub shoulders with him a little bit tomorrow at the Emden on campus, 303 South State Street. For first 200 customers, guaranteed an autograph, and those wristbands available beginning at 9 a.m. So the Michigan basketball discussion, and I want to welcome Zach Shaw in from UM Hoops. Zach, and he's the intern here, by the way, in case you haven't.
Intern Zach some days.
Yeah. We normally never give last names, but because you are established outside of your intern duties, I think it's pertinent to mention that you do indeed have a last name. So
surprised you don't just give all the interns numbers.
Their last names become the intern until they finish their internship. So.
Right, but definitely pertinent to have him involved in this discussion about Michigan basketball because, as I said before, we went to the break, 9-5 overall, 19-8, 9-5 in conference play, 19-8 overall with, a tough finish to the regular season slate. So they're at Maryland on Sunday, Northwestern on Wednesday, winnable game, but nothing's a gimme for this team. At Wisconsin playing a lot better basketball now, and then home against Iowa. I know Iowa, you saw them. Penn State's been a tough team for a few teams here lately, but no chance that Michigan runs into an Iowa team that might be overlooking them. So very, very tough slate down the stretch. My question to you guys, starting with you, Brian, is if they just beat Northwestern, has Michigan punched his ticket?
Yes. It's a really weird profile because it had, I think, Penn State just moved in the top 100 in RPI. Before that, they had zero opponents from 50 to 100. So they were 3-7 against the top 50, which is actually a good record for a bubble team. They had nothing in the middle section, so people can always like you need four top 100 wins to get in it. And Michigan might defy that this year just because their schedule is so unbalanced. But I think they're in. This is going to be a team that is probably 10-8 or 11-7 in the Big Ten. They've got three, I think, real quality wins now that Texas is playing very well. And the bubble is soft this year, especially because SMU and Louisville, two teams that would normally be in the tournament, are taking tournament bans. So I would be really, really surprised if any finish saw Michigan out of the tournament. Now, if they just beat Northwestern, they might have to sweat a little bit on Selection Sunday. But I think it'll be like that first year where Michigan gets in the tournament and everybody's like, they're on the bubble, they're on the bubble, and they're in an 8-9 game. Mm-hmm. And that's not, you're not on the bubble if you're in an 8-9 game. So I think they're pretty securely in. I just, you know, I don't think they're going to do much when they get there. So
Zach?
Yeah, no, I have the same thought. My thought all along has been if they got to 21, you know, because you probably need 20, but they're not going to count Northern Michigan. But if they get to 21, either with two regular season wins or beating Northwestern as they should and then winning in the Big Ten tournament, I think they have a good chance. But the thing is, I think if Michigan fans probably want a couple more, that way they can get up to that 7 seed. You know, if they pull off an upset, they get a whole week to prepare for Iowa with no classes. Mm-hmm. You know, if they can get that win to get up to a 6 seed.
But you
then,
can't practice over spring break. We've already established
Oh, that's right. That's right. Yeah, they'll be in the cold Ann Arbor just suffering through spring break. But if they can get up to that 7-6 seed, then I think the season gets more interesting because that 8-9 game, even if you win, you're playing a 1 seed. Yeah, they can make it, but I don't think that's what the fans necessarily want out of this season.
Yeah, the thing that always kind of makes you have a hint of confidence, even in the season that has been wrought with inconsistency, is, you know, John Beilein is his system is just really, really tough to prepare for. So if you win a game, a quick turnaround, who knows? Now we're getting ahead of ourselves, right? Yeah. I mean, this team hasn't really shown the ability to string things together. Case in point, they go out and play a really good defensive game against Purdue. They did something no one on earth expected them to do in out-rebounding Purdue. And then they come out against Ohio State, Craig, and the players were saying one of the things that really caught me, and I noticed it during the game, Mark Donnell said after, he said, we noticed 10 minutes into the game we really needed to step it up. It's like, man, dude.
Well, I mean, this has been an interesting season, to say the least. You know, first of all, I think one of Brian's drunks from San Pedro Island, was filming or doing the camera decision on the game. I mean, that game was almost unwatchable.
Yeah, I have no idea what happened. I have no idea.
Yeah, I mean, it was hard to watch and figure out what was going on, and whoever had that idea should be fired. And I'm not sure why they just didn't change it at halftime, but aside from that, this team is a really odd team. At the beginning of the season, Brian and I both said that we thought this would be a really good shooting team, and we both had other question marks, different question marks. But my question mark was whether we could rebound at all on the defensive end, because that had been a problem for us. But right now, this is stunning to me. I think we're the number 32 defensive rebounding team in the country, and we've just been coming up week after week after week, and we're number 3 or 4 in the Big Ten in defensive rebounding. So this actually, even though there's a lot of hoo-ha about the team being sort of soft, I don't think so. I mean, what's going on is we're just not shooting the ball. Some of that is that we're not getting the world's greatest looks because our half-court offense isn't too good, but in the Big Ten, I mean, we're shooting under 45%. Our opponents are shooting 47%, and we still got, you know, three really good teams to play. So those numbers may even move worse than that. So it really has been a mystifying year shooting. And the thing that looks sort of problematic to me, at least, defensive rebounding, has been unbelievably good.
You know, a lot of times I really think that you can read a great deal into what the players are saying, especially when what a player is saying is totally counter what the coach might be saying. Because, you know, a lot of times a coach might try to shield this team. So, you know, when John Beilein says, you know, things like, hey, leadership is not an issue. I don't think leadership is, but he was saying leadership is not an issue. And he was talking about the, you know, there was some talk about fatigue being an issue in the Ohio State game. Well, in that Michigan State game, when people were asking about leadership, that was the game where Zach kind of blew up at the team. And I, you know, to me, that was an example of a guy kind of seeing a lack of intensity. He said a lack of guys taking it personally. And I think this team needs that kind of presence, the kind of presence that he's trying to be. And then after the Ohio State game, you heard Zach say, "Man, I'm not using fatigue as a reason for us, or as an excuse for us not to come out and start the game off better. He said, you know, we eventually started to play better, but we got to do that from the start. So you see a guy, you hear a guy trying to take some control, trying to instill some intensity into the team, because I think they play with effort. I don't think they always play with intensity.
Yeah, I'm not buying into that at all. You know, I think we are playing with intensity. I don't think fatigue is an issue. It shouldn't be. I think 5 of 24 from the three is an issue.
You don't think that that's a reflection of settling for jump shots at times?
Well, no. Their alternatives to jump shots aren't good right now because their pick and roll offense has almost evaporated.
But why?
Because their bigs can't catch the ball and can't finish.
And I think when I say intensity, and this is something that I pointed to, you know, going back a few games. Look, there's more to setting a screen than just standing there.
Yeah.
I mean, are you making contact? Are you hitting a body? Are guys cutting tight off of screens? Are there hard basket cuts? And you can hear things like, for instance, after that game, after that Michigan State game, John Beilein said, look at how Michigan State set screens. I mean, he made a point to talk about how physical they are in setting screens. If you watch the Ohio State game. You heard Dan Dockich. You couldn't see the game. You may have heard Dan Dockich say, look at how hard Ohio State is cutting to the basket. That's what I mean when I say intensity, and you don't always see that with Michigan.
No, and I think that, you know, he made a good point in the last game when Aubrey Dawkins went and got an offensive rebound. That was kind of a surprise effort play where you get that extra possession. He's like, we don't see that enough for Michigan. And I think that's an accurate – I hate intensity. I hate effort in terms of explaining why basketball teams aren't good. But I think that he does have a point where Michigan doesn't have that kind of scrappy McGarry mentality where they're generating extra possessions by just getting on the floor and doing the kind of things. And Michigan does do that when it comes to defensive rebounding. So you see Derek Walton.
Right.
And he has a defensive rebound rate higher than anyone on the team. And that's not a bad thing. He's got a rebound rate higher than a lot of bigs in the Big Ten.
Right. And you got the players saying it, though. Yeah. And that's the thing that I, you know, whether you agree with it or not, I mean, you got guys on the team saying that this is an issue. You got Zach Irvin saying, hey, I don't think the team is taking things personal enough. You got Mark Donnell after a game saying, hey, 10 minutes in, we realize we got to step it up. We aren't matching, you know, the intensity of the other side. I'm paraphrasing, but we aren't basically matching the intensity of the other side. So if you hear the guys on the team that are actually on the floor saying it, to me that signals that there is an issue there that they need to be more consistent with.
Yeah, I'm just not buying this at all. I look at the Ohio State game. I mean, I think it's just something to say. In the Ohio State game, we got 10 offensive rebounds. Ohio State has 3.
Ohio State didn't miss any shots.
Well, they missed 23 shots. So they were 3 of 23. We're 10 of 36. We're, you know, a slightly below average on offensive rebounds. They're nowhere still on offensive rebounds.
Didn't they shoot 60% in the second half or something like that? Yeah, they shot 59% in the second half.
Well, I know they shot well, but, I mean, you're talking about intensity, and I agree, shooting. I mean, we're just not shooting the ball. I mean, you look at, and I've tried to go back through the tapes and say, well, are we just getting crappy looks? And occasionally. But mostly our looks are about the same as everybody else's looks from three.
I don't know. They've been playing a lot of hero ball the last couple of weeks where it's just like, you know, someone touches the ball and it never gets out of their hands. They take a terrible off balance, off the dribble shot. And
that was
8 minutes of the Purdue game where they're and I don't understand how they won that game because their offense looked like Tommy Amaker was running it for most of that second half.
I'm not convinced that Derek Walton's a real point guard. He's a warrior. He's a tough dude. He's the best 6-foot rebounder in the history of the game, and that's probably not an exaggeration. But whether he's a point guard or not, or whether he's getting us into offense or not, I'm not really sure. But I do think this: the last two games we're 10 of 44 from three. And maybe if some of those looks weren't the world's greatest looks, but if you, you know, if you look, but I thought compared to the teams we're playing, they were pretty ordinary looks. And by and large, and so to me, it's just, we ain't shooting the ball. Plain and simple. And you look at Derek, who's shooting in the Big Ten 37% from three. He's shooting 34% from two. Zach is shooting better from three than from two also. And then the rest of the team, nobody else is making a three.
And so, but what do you do in the absence of 3-point efficiency? And that's another thing that they continue. And even Beilein talked about that. You know, you got to get downhill more. Got to get more going to the basket. For a time in this season, it looked like they had turned the corner in that regard. They were getting to the free throw line more often. You had multiple guys getting to the rim, including Duncan Robinson. And now you don't see that nearly as much. Now, are they playing better defensive teams? Sure. But they, right now, and you can hear it in talking to them, they feel like settling a little too much on offense. And I don't think it's them not getting in the sets. I see Derek Walton. I see them looking to the sideline for set calls more than I feel like I ever have. I mean, I feel like they are running more sets than they have.
You can run all the sets you want, but if you don't get the ball inside the 3-point arc until there's 10 seconds left on the clock, it's not going to be a good offensive possession. And that's happened way too often. And the bigs have something to do with that because they don't set screens very well. And you know, that is a thing. There was a attempted reverse layup by Denal in this Ohio State game on a shot that should have been a dunk. And it's just, you know, I don't like the soft as a pejorative directed at a player, but that was soft. You know, that like, go up strong, put your chin on the rim and dunk the ball. But Michigan doesn't have that guy. And, you know, I thought it was going to be Ricky Doyle because Ricky Doyle had a really promising freshman season. He shot something like 80% at the rim, which is terrific. And he's completely collapsed. Like, you know, his turnover rate has, I think, doubled or possibly even tripled. And he's just not finishing. He can't stay on the floor because he's just a complete non-entity on offense, and you can't have that happen. And
he can't catch the ball.
And I think that's the main problem with the team is that their bigs have gone backwards. And you've got Denal out there who has improved from the beginning of the year, but in terms of, like, is this an average Big Ten post? No, he is not. And we had the idea that he was when Michigan had that kind of surge at the beginning of the Big Ten season where they finally figured out the pick and roll. But it turns out that was a very one-dimensional thing that opponents have learned to take away. So where does this team go? They go out in the first round or second round probably, and that's just the way that happened. I mean, they haven't had Caris LeVert for the entire Big Ten season.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That's the second straight year they haven't had their best player for a big chunk of the year.
So what do you guys think? And look, it was inevitable that, you know, the scouting report on Duncan Robinson was going to make the rounds, and it was going to be tougher to get clean looks, and it's exceedingly tough now. But it seems that even when he does get a clean look now, it's not going down.
Yeah, and that'll happen, especially once you're kind of out of that rhythm because you're not getting enough shots. And we saw in the Purdue game where he's frustrated and he's just taking it off the dribble and shooting, and that's not his game. So he's frustrated that he's not getting shots, and I think that's kind of leaking into other parts of his game. It's going to be something that he has to develop probably over the offseason.
Yeah, from what I've seen, it just because he did it his freshman year at Williams College too. You know, he kind of lost his legs a little bit toward the end of the year. His shooting percentage, I think, got cut in half, and all of a sudden you're looking at a guy who has to drive it. You know, he can draw out the defense to the perimeter, but as far as making shots and being efficient on offense, his best move is to drive it in, look to kick it out to someone, or go for a mid-range shot. So no, I think that the season kind of slows down. They had 3 games in 7 days. Now they kind of get a few more days off, few days off before Maryland, you know, Northwestern, Wisconsin, Iowa. So I think it'll go up, but yeah, it's definitely a thing that he needs to develop that endurance to make it through a 32-game season.
Yeah, I feel like I kind of described it like a marathon. You know, he's going to have to be like a marathon runner every time down the floor in the half court. And Craig, you can appreciate this. You know, I don't think I ever saw Reggie Miller create his own shot. I can't, you know, struggling to think of a big play sequence where where Reggie Miller put the ball on the floor and made a play. They ran him off of screen after screen after screen, multiple actions every time down the floor to get him free. And that's how I envision them getting Duncan Robinson looks down the line. You know, he's not Nick Stauskas, and he can shoot it like Nick. He can't put it on the floor like Nick consistently. You know, I don't know that he'll ever be, you know, the pick-and-roll threat that Nick was, because Nick can make decisions on the bounce and create for others. That just doesn't really seem like it's his game. I don't want to completely rule it out, but I envision him more as the guy that you run off of multiple screens, get him free, to get him looks in the half court. That's not, they don't really do a lot of that right now for Duncan Robinson.
Well, that's right. I mean, you know, I think Brian appropriately derided the not just a shooter comments from the color guys who weren't watching Nick on a weekly basis, and I don't think Duncan Robinson is ever going to be that kind of a player. I mean, Duncan Robinson to me is like a tall Steve Alford. And when Alford was at Indiana, they ran a million different ways to get him shots, because Alford really couldn't create his own shot either, but he could sure as heck make a shot. And so somehow they're going to have to use, as you said, similar to Reggie Miller, they're going to have to use some sort of screen action or some kind of action to get him open looks, but because he isn't going to create them himself. And he can't put the ball on the floor in a way to, you know, to give himself space. So somehow, if they're going to use him, you know, and Dawkins hasn't shot the ball badly, but Dawkins is even worse defensively than Duncan.
Have you guys? He's
pretty bad.
Yeah, I know he's no. I said is he bad? I think they're both pretty bad defensively. That's my point.
Robinson had kind of a renaissance there in the middle of the Big Ten season where he was okay. And now it seems like it's kind of going downhill again, because he's disconnected from his swag, we'll say.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, Kalik Hudson.
Well, look, you know, I do have an opportunity as we get to a break here to let you guys know about a special event. Bullion Sales, our friends out at 8530 North Territorial Road in Dexter. They are the presenting sponsor for the second annual Mini Golf Campfire Classic, March 19th at the Suburban Collection Showplace in Novi. So North Star Reach, who, I mean, they do a terrific job, and we hope to get a chance to get out and see the facility with you know, all the things they do for the kids, Camp Mishitonki. You know, Bullion Sales is doing their part to help contribute to the cause. And again, they are the presenting sponsor for the second annual Mini Golf Campfire Classic, March 19th, Suburban Collection Showplace in Novi. You can find more information about that at northstarreach.org. And you can go to the Mini Golf link. It's under the events heading and get the information for that. Also, I want to let you know about a week later, on March 26th, the open house, 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. over at Bullion Sales. 8530 North Territorial Road in Dexter. Great deals on Kubota tractors, Hotel Hickman Chuck Wagon Barbecue, live band. Bubba from W4 Country will be there. And their theme is "How is your Kubota running?" Featuring original Bullion customers tractors dating back to 1976 on display. So that tells you, you buy Kubota, you buy from Bullion. They last. Bullion Sales and Service, 8530 North Territorial Road in Dexter. You can find them online at weknowtractors.com. Got one more break to get to. Be back on the other side here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050, WTKA, The Ticket. And we are back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050, WTKA, online at WTKA.com, or live here inside the MDN studios. I want to remind you of a couple of opportunities you'll have to see Jim Harbaugh tomorrow. He will be at the MDN on campus, 303 South State Street, from 3 until 4:30 p.m. The first 200 customers are guaranteed an autograph. Wristbands will be available at 9 a.m. So if you want your Jim Harbaugh autograph, got to get on the good foot. You also have an opportunity to not only see Jim Harbaugh, but also John Harbaugh, March 11th at the Ann Arbor Pioneer Athletics Hall of Fame Banquet. Tickets are still available. You can go to Facebook and do a search for Ann Arbor Pioneer Athletics Hall of Fame, and it'll take you right there where you can go and get your tickets. So it's going to be a great night, a lot of great speeches. Ira and I are going to be emceeing and introducing the Brothers Harbaugh, so it's going to be a great time. Really, really looking forward to it. That is March 11th. Let's go to the phones. Go down to Atlanta and talk to Phil. Phil, what do you have for us?
You know, since we're talking about basketball, my favorite topic, Sam, you know, let me start with Phil's, what Michigan needs to do. And let me start with Coach Beilein. First, recruit better talent. You know, we've been going through this for, I don't know, forever and a day, as long as I've been on this radio show. That's step one. Two, if you can get it, how about do something that I guess what he's known for, taking subpar talent and coaching them up. You know, I'm not so always fast to throw the players under the bus. I look at the coach first. Now, as far as the players go, yes, the players need to play with more intensity. They need to be more aggressive out there. Now, in my take, it's not in their DNA, but, you know, you got to make the best do what you have. They have to take this long stretch. They have to find ways to get Duncan loose. But more importantly, you know, not having Caris LeVert, you know, hurts the team athletically, defensively, and elsewise. And, what happened? Who's that, Sam? Who's that five-star kid that just can't see the court? I can't think of his name.
Cam Chapman.
Where is he at?
Cam Chapman. If you listen to this show, you heard quite often a description of Cam Chapman as a guy who had some developing ahead of him, and not the type of guy that was going to come in here and be a Mitch McGarry type of impact player. You know, I understand what the ratings say, and I use him as a guide. But I had seen him play and knew that he wasn't a kid that was going to come in here and be that type of player. Now, that doesn't mean that he has no value. I think he's a plus passer. I think he's effective at putting the ball on the floor for his size. But, you know, his shot has needed some work. You know, certainly there were some times where you could tell the coaches thought he was kind of aloof defensively. As those things become more consistent, I think you'll see him get more time. And, you know, even heard Dan Dockett talking about him, you know, showing up to the arena early to get some shots up and that kind of thing. So I don't think all hope is lost for him. But a couple of things, Phil. Look, you know, in the all the years that we've been talking about Michigan basketball, you know, the talent that they recruited 3 or 4 years ago, those under-the-radar guys that developed, I didn't hear you give them much credit for that. I think the sweet spot for Michigan, though, is they are recruiting the kinds of guys that you're talking about, you know, guys that you can take, develop into plus players. You know, I think if you look at this upcoming class, I think, you know, X is having a great season. You know, he's looking like a guy. I think Ibby Watson is having a really good season as well. I think he could be, you know, a really good player. I think the key, though, is going to be for them to achieve that mesh, that mixture that they had in the championship run. You know, Trey Burke turned out to be a transcendent player. He was a big-time guy. Turned out to be a top-100 guy at the end of his high school career. Same thing with Glenn Robinson, top-100 guy at the end of his high school career. You know, you saw Tim develop into something when he got here. Nick Stauskas really blossomed. But they were able to pair all of those guys with a five-star big-timer in Mitch McGarry. I think you got to have both. I think you can have the 3 or 4 year guys, but you also got to get a couple of big-time blue chippers in there to complement them. And those are the kinds of guys that they missed on over the past couple of years that might have helped bridge the gap. It's not they aren't recruiting them. They just missed on some of those guys, and hopefully they don't continue to miss on them. But I like X. I like Ibby. I like those two in particular. I think those kids have some potential.
Yeah, and it's
go ahead, Brian.
Go ahead, Greg.
Well, I was just going to say, I've been watching a little bit of X's tape. He put up 59 points against Fremont Ross. I don't know what kind of a team they have, but that's usually a decent athletic programs down there where Charles Woodson and Rob Lytle are from. And then he put up 65 and three quarters, three and a half quarters. And so he may not be the world's greatest shooter, but he can certainly score. And from the tape I've seen, he gets the ball to the basket. He can see it in traffic. I mean, I could see him playing the point next year and move Walton over to two. And you can play with two smallish guards. I mean, teams have done that. Ohio State has done it many times. And I think you can do that. And that may change things around for Michigan, because I think he may be a better guy for us in the half court. Also watch some Austin Davis. You know, when last year Austin Davis, when Michigan recruited him, he was sort of pudgy. He isn't pudgy now at all. I mean, he is really in shape. He's lost 30 or 40 pounds. He's got great hands. Whoever's coached him has done a terrific job because he has post moves. He understands footwork. I know he plays against Munchkins, and I know he plays against talent that's, you know, not the sort of talent you'd like to see him play against. But, you know, the more I look at him, the more I think, you know, maybe that guy is going to be a player. So, you know, even though the recruiting class doesn't on its face perhaps look great, I think it has some potential. I don't know much about Teske. I know he's a 7-footer or 7-1. And a shot blocker, and I haven't watched E.B. Watson much, but maybe Sam could speak to him. But it looks like a potentially, you know, it could be a very good recruiting player.
Well, you know, the part about Austin Davis, and you mentioned, you know, an aspect of his game that I just don't expect to be utilized, and that's him on the block. That's just not in what they do. Now, if he can catch the ball, you know, that's a huge thing, obviously. In their pick and roll offense, so that could be something that sees him get on the floor next year. We'll see, but that'll do it for today's show. We are out of time. Thanks for listening to the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTK, the Ticket, the official voice of University of Michigan Sports, Ann Arbor, a Cumulus station.